Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Nobody has more respect for women than I do. Nobody.
Hillary Clinton wants to abolish it, believe me. She wants to abolish our Second Amendment.
I think they didn't deny it. I don't think anybody denied it.
Other presidents did not call, did write letters, and some presidents didn't do anything.
Many people have come out and said, I'm right.
You really do have to ask yourself, where does it stop?
Hello and welcome to Fallacious Trump, the podcast where we use the insane ramblings of Individual One to explain logical fallacies. I'm your host, Jim.
And I'm your other host, Mark. The logical fallacy is an error in reasoning that results in bad or invalid arguments. And the logical fallacy we're looking at this week is argumentum ad nauseam, also known as proof by assertion and argument by repetition.
Yeah, so this is a fairly easy one to understand, really. Argumentum ad nauseum, or argument by repetition, is simply when a claim is repeated over and over again, often in the face of direct rebuttal or proof of the opposite, but the person just keeps on saying it. And the idea is that after a while, people will get sick of continually rebutting it. And there will be a point at which the claim will be made and there will be no rebuttal. And therefore, you kind of win the argument in that way.
All right.
It's being quite generous to even call it an argument, really. It's more just pretending that no one's noticed you're lying, which Trump is pretty good at.
Yep.
And in fact, the reason we were going to do a different fallacy this week, but the reason that I decided we should do this one is because the Washington Post have come out with a whole new rating this week in their fact checking, because basically their four Pinocchio scale that showed how whether a lie or a misrepresentation was kind of minor or a mistake or anything like that, all the way up to four Pinocchios, which is basically an outright lie.
Yeah,
that wasn't enough to deal with
Trump.
Wasn't
enough. Oh my God!
Because they've noticed that where most politicians, especially if they get three or four Pinocchios, they will kind of readdress what they do and start saying something different. They won't continue to say the same thing. Trump doesn't do that. He continues to say the same thing, even when people have proved it to be wrong. So much that it's clear that he must know it's wrong, and he is just continuing to say it in the hopes that eventually people will believe it. And so they've come out with a new rating called the Bottomless Pinocchio.
Oh no, like an infinite number.
Which is,
Which
is specifically for this, for politicians generally who make these claims, repeat the claims, even in the face of evidence that has been repeatedly usually shown them, and they continue to say the same thing. So our first example of this is in the campaign, Trump was talking about his tax cut that he wanted to do. And how big it would be. And he said it would be the biggest since Reagan. And he said that a lot. He said it repeatedly. But about May of 2017, he changed his mind and decided that actually it was bigger than Reagan's. It was bigger than anyone in the entire history of the US.
Entire history and, of the world ever.
Yeah. Because obviously with Trump, everything has to be record-breaking. It has to be the biggest. It has to be the most important, because otherwise it's just, what's the point?
No point coming second.
No point at all.
No.
Yeah, so he said this, that it was the biggest one. And he said it a few times.
We're proposing one of the largest tax cuts in history, even larger than that of President Ronald Reagan.
We passed the largest tax cuts and reform in American history.
And this is the biggest tax cut in history. This is bigger than Reagan.
As you know, we put our tax plan in. It's a massive tax cut, the biggest tax cut in the history of our country.
Now, it wasn't the biggest tax cut in history, you'll be surprised to find.
Yeah.
It wasn't bigger than Reagan's, in fact. It wasn't bigger than two of Truman's tax cuts or two of Obama's tax cuts. So you don't even have to go back very far in history to find bigger tax cuts than Trump's.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter how many times that was pointed out to him, he continued to say it. In fact, since May of 2017, he has repeated some version of this 123 times.
Oh, my God. And he's just using the repetition of it as proof of it. He's not.
Absolutely.
So he's kind of glossing over the fact that somebody has said to him, you know, well, history actually shows that there weren't that, but you only need to look like a year ago since he started saying that to find a bigger tax cut. But he just uses the saying of it again to prove the saying of it. So that's the proof by assertion. I'm just saying this, and that's the proof of it. So it's, and yeah, so you just get kind of worn down by it. Is it the practical application of what Goebbels kind of advocated, which was, you know, if you say something often enough, it becomes the truth. So you say, you're saying a lie, just keep saying it and it will become the truth. It just takes the, it replaces the space otherwise occupied by facts.
Yeah, it is another reason that it's difficult not to compare Trump to Hitler. It's just one of those the gifts that keeps on giving in that way. But yeah, it is absolutely. It was the Nazi propaganda method was to create a big lie that even if it was completely obviously untrue, and just keep saying it until people believed it or stopped saying it was a lie.
Yeah. And it's just completely self-serving thing, isn't it? And I wonder if he actually believes it, because he can't do, because he, up until he realized that Reagan had a bigger one, and then he kind of thought, well, hang on a minute, I don't want to be second best, so I will say that he's bigger than Reagan. So and he's just kind of up the lie to serve his own ends.
The first bit was a lie anyway, because it was never, it wasn't the biggest since Reagan.
No.
Even.
No.
So,
no.
Yeah, this is the tax cut that was so big he wanted to call it the tax cut. Remember?
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. That's what he was going to call it. Yeah.
Because it was so huge.
It was so huge.
Or huge.
So huge. So, I mean, who does he think he's kidding? And, well, obviously, from the sound of the tape we just heard, there are many people he's kidding.
About 35, 40% of the US voting.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, I think, who he thinks he's kidding. He also thinks he's kidding them about the border wall, his campaign pledge that he would build a wall between the US and Mexico, which, and he's been saying for about 8 months now that they've started building the wall, mm-hmm. which isn't true, hasn't been true at any point during that period, but it hasn't stopped him saying it.
We started building our wall. I'm so proud of it. We started. We have 1.6 billion.
Oh, we're building the wall. No, we're building the wall. Don't worry. We've already started. 1.6 billion. We've already started.
We need the wall. We've started building the wall.
So the 1.6 billion that they got from Congress was for improving and renovating parts of the existing fences and borders that are already there, physical borders. None of it is allocated to wall building at all.
Yeah.
And they haven't started building it. It didn't stop him in just 7 months prior to the midterms.
Right.
Repeating the claim 86 times.
Oh, my God. I mean, all you've got to do is just watch the news. Which is fake news. Fake news, which, you know, of just pictures. I mean, what are you supposed to believe? Because the most of America will not know, not be able to see that the wall isn't being built. So they're relying on maybe some pictures from the news that might show the big absence of wall, which isn't newsworthy. There's just a big gap where there is no wall. And what he does is say, well, that's fake news. So the stuff that you watch in order to verify that what's going on in places that you can't get to he's just said, well, you can't trust that. You've got to listen to me. We're building the wall. We're building the wall. This money that was allocated to something else is proof that we're building it. We've already started. Because he just kind of, it's a kid that's been caught not doing stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like, so you're not cleaning the yard yet. And he goes, yeah, I am.
Yeah, I've started.
I'm clean.
I've started.
I'm sweeping the yard right now. I've got a broom in my hand. I'm sweeping the yard. When you plainly hasn't. And you look at him, you go, you're not doing it. He said, well, you see, then you need to get your eyes tested because I clearly am. Mm-hmm. You know, as he's sitting playing Call of Duty, you know, he's not in the yard with a broom in his hand.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's that thing that I used to say to my kids, you need to brush your teeth. And they're going, we are. And they're not. They're sitting, eating sweets.
Yeah.
You know, we're brushing, you know, and they're vehement in their assertion that they're actually in the middle of cleaning the teeth. You know, I don't know what they're cleaning with. Sweets, mainly. But, yeah. So you think, well, you're not cleaning your teeth. I'll just go to the bathroom and look. No, you're not there. That's fake news. So it's just that. I'll go to the Mexican border and see whether the wall is being built. Well, you can't trust your eyes. Well, who do I have to trust? You have to trust me because I'm the president.
Yeah, and he's continuing to say it, and he's continuing to claim that it's basically this is his promise, his campaign promise, and he's living up to it. And the people who take his word for it believe that he is fulfilling his promise, when in fact.
Yeah.
But the weird thing is that it's internally contradictory as well, because he's complaining. In fact, he's practically at the point right now of shutting down the government because the Democrats
won't
give him the votes to fund the
war.
Won't
give him the money,
that supposedly he's already
building with money he's already got.
And also, he's still claiming that Mexico is paying for it. So today, he tweeted this. He said, I often stated, one way or the other, Mexico is going to pay for the wall. This has never changed. Our new deal with Mexico and Canada, the USMCA, is so much better than the old, very costly and anti-USA NAFTA deal that just by the money we save, Mexico is paying for the wall. So
he's claiming he's now renegotiated
an agreement with Mexico.
Yeah.
The money that they saved is going to pay for the wall, which isn't how money works. Because that money's not allocated to wall building. He doesn't get to just reallocate money he saves in one area.
Even if you agree
and believe that he saved money in the renegotiated deal, he doesn't just get to put that into the wall. That's not how that works. Yeah.
No, what would be the point of renegotiating a deal if it isn't going to be any cheaper?
Yeah.
Because you're just going to spend it everywhere else.
This tweet is like me saying, BP is going to pay for my lunch, and then cycling to work and saying, see, because I saved the money on the petrol, BP bought me lunch.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's just nonsense.
Yeah. No, it's a kind of, at the very least, it's an accountancy trick.
Yeah.
Isn't it? Where you kind of say, he's using the weasel words in real terms.
Yeah.
You know, we're saving that money. It's like, if you go self-employed, then you're earning more money because you're dealing with your own tax. What? Huh? Well, you're not. And that, it's just an accounting ploy. So is he doing arse covering moves there with that tweet by saying, okay, well, those people that are looking into the where is the money, where is the wall? Well, I've got the money because I've saved it by redoing NAFTA, but which is nothing to do with the Democrats shutting down the government because they're not giving me the money. There's nothing. That's just something completely different. That's a different wall.
Most of the replies to that tweet are, oh, brilliant, so you don't need us to pay for it.
Basically. Yeah.
now you won't need the money from the taxpayer that you've been trying to get out of us.
Yeah. So you're threatening to shut down government for. Yes. What the hell? He would just say that boldly in your face. He would look you clean in the eye and go, yeah, I am paying for the wall. And you could take him, well, no, you couldn't take him there because he'd say, well, no, it's raining.
Yeah, he can just absolutely you know, stand up in front of a group of people and say, we're building the wall, Mexico's paying for it. You know, I just, it doesn't matter that it's a complete lie, because he's, by the time anyone gets to ask him a question, he's already moved on to something else, or walked away, or
just walked off. Just wandered off. Yeah, it's just, it's bald faced lies, and kind of nobody's buying it. I get the feeling latterly that real life's happening, and then there's Trump, and whereas it used to be, you know, they used to be a bit more connected than they are now. I mean, not that they were ever that much connected, but so I think people are just kind of going, you know, they're saying, oh, yeah, that Trump guy, yeah, he lives where the unicorns are, you know, beyond the rainbow. That's, you know, that's, you want to go see Trump? Yeah, that's where you need to be.
And now is the time, I think, for Mark's British Politics Corner.
So this week we are travelling back in time somewhat to a time before... before Jeremy Corbyn, before the previous Labour Party being in opposition. No, they've always been in opposition. It's so complicated here in British politics this week. We're not quite sure who's in charge anymore. Must tip my hat to Jim, who pointed this one out, which is just brilliant. And I've got to, this is Ed Miliband, who was the leader of the Labour Party up until Corbyn became the leader. Ed Miliband, he's the leader of the opposition. During 2014, in February, there was a strike on the London Underground, and David Cameron, the then Prime Minister, was saying it was awful, and Ed Miliband was interviewed and asked what he thought about it. And what is interesting and also terrifying about this interview is that he proves his position. He asserts his position purely by repeating the same phrases over and over. So here's his opening statement in response to what's going on with this strike. This is what he says first.
These strikes are wrong at a time when negotiations are still going on. But parents and the public have been let down by both sides because the government has acted in a reckless and provocative manner. After today's disruption, I urge both sides to put aside the rhetoric, get round the negotiating table, and stop it happening again.
So basically, there's a kind of four or five statements there saying so they shouldn't be striking whilst the negotiations are going on. The public and parents are being affected. Why he's made a distinction here, I don't know. The government has made a kind of a heavy-handed response, and they shouldn't have. And he's saying they should just get back and negotiate. So you know, you think, oh, fair enough. That's quite a good set of positions there. So the interviewer then says to him, okay, however, you are the Labour leader, and the Labour movement is supposed to protect the rights of workers. Some of the people on strike are members of the Labour movement. So what do you say to them?
At a time when negotiations are still going on, I do believe these strikes are wrong. And that's why I say both sides should, after today's disruption, get round the negotiating table, put aside the rhetoric, and sort the problem out. Because the public and parents have been let down by both sides. The government's acted in a reckless and provocative manner.
So, recognise that at all?
Does sound like we just kind of re-edited it slightly and shifted things around.
Yeah, it was kind of groundhog.
I swear, I didn't do that.
That is what it says. So, okay, so the guy who's asking the question doesn't kind of go, Ed, you just said that? Is it me? Or he just kind of, shakes his head and puts his fingers in his ears and just kind of cleans them out and goes, okay, I'll give it another go. So he then asks him, well, do you think the striking leaders are saying one thing in private and one thing in public? Do you think they are negotiating in good faith? So Ed comes back with...
What I say is that the strikes are wrong when negotiations are still going on, but the government has acted in a reckless and provocative manner in the way it's gone about these issues. After today's disruption, I urge both sides to get around the negotiating table, put aside the rhetoric, and stop this kind of thing happening again.
So, and stop this kind of thing happening again. We'll kind of come back and haunt us. So you think, well, what? Hang on a minute. So he's just said the same things again. It's kind of like one of those electronic.
Yeah. It's like you pull the string.
Yeah.
He'll say.
Yes, exactly. Well, yeah. And he doesn't. And he looks pretty much like one of those talking dolls. I must admit, he's got a very low, him and his brother got very low hairlines. But it's also one of those things where you get an interview. So Tom Cruise is in the latest Mission Impossible movie, and you get your electronic press kit, which has got a pre-recorded interview with Tom Cruise, and then you just stick your interviewer. Yeah, in the other angle with the same kind of decorative banner behind you, and you can ask your questions in there. So you would just fit the questions in, and for all the world, it looks like that. And it looks, you know, and Ed Miliband's face doesn't change at all. Theresa May gets described as Maybot, but he's just, you know, Milibandroid. He's doing this thing over and over and over again, and the guy is still going, by which point I'm losing the will to live. and the guy says to him, so okay, have you spoken to the union leaders privately?
I mean, good on him for continuing to ask questions at this point,
because I know
he might as well just go, all right, pretend I've said something else.
And yeah, if this was Jeremy Paxman, who famously asked the Minister of Defence during the Falklands War the same question about 21 times in order to elicit a response from him, this guy, it's like one of those the worst interviews on Letterman kind of thing, where you think, oh my God, he's really struggling, you know, and there's no sense from the interviewer that he's even struggling. Yeah, he's just kind of going,
he just keeps on going.
It just keeps on going, which, keeps chipping away. So it's occurred to him that maybe Miliband's saying something publicly different from what is privately, because he's saying this thing publicly over and over again. In fact, I think at one point he says, this, of course, will be broadcast. And he says, so are you saying anything privately, you know, to further the negotiations that you're not saying publicly? And Miliband, strangely enough, repeats the same thing.
What I say in public and in private to everybody involved in this is get round the negotiating table, put aside the rhetoric, and stop this kind of action happening again. These strikes are wrong because the negotiations are still going on.
I've added the reverb and the fade for comic effect. Yeah. and then picking up on one of the phrases that he has, which is the public and parents have been affected alike. He says, the interviewer, with all, with all innocence.
Sheer desperation now.
Sheer desperation says, okay, I'm a parent, you're a parent. How has this affected parents?
I think parents up and down the country have been affected by this action. And it's wrong at a time when negotiations are still going on. Parents have been let down by both sides because the government has acted in a reckless and provocative manner.
So I was beginning to suspect at this point that Ed Miliband is either operated by the Henson studio or that he's just making sure that his message, however they edit this, he's going to get to have said what he wants to say.
Yeah, I think that's the most generous reading of this, is that he just had he had a message that he wanted it to be shown on the news, no matter how little time they gave him. The only thing they were going to get out of him was this single clear message.
Yeah.
Trouble is, they didn't edit it down to one answer. They showed the whole thing, which made him look completely.
Hold on. Oh, yeah. Which just made him, he couldn't eat a bacon sandwich on air, on the screen. And he couldn't do this. So he just looks like an idiot. Yeah, absolutely. So they could have saved time and do what I did, which is to edit all the answers together at once. So this is what they all sound like, just to show you how close together the answers all are. So he's reasserting his position by repeating it ad nauseum. So I've saved time and just edited them all together. So here he is doing them all at once.
At a time when negotiations are still going on,
at a time when
negotiations are still going on. You know, however many screens all at once, and they just ran the same day next to each other over and over again, it would be like that. But it would just be awful, wouldn't it? Like that. I mean, it's pretty unbearable on Groundhog Day, but with the Miliband droid, it's just, what did he think? Well, we know what, well, we think we, he was, what he was thinking was, right, they'll just cut this. So it doesn't matter which of the questions they ask, I will get my answer out. But then they showed it all. And it's just brilliant, isn't it? So my other example is thankfully a little bit shorter, and it kind of brings us bang up to date with what's going on over this side of the pond with the negotiations for the exit from the European Union. So this is Theresa May explaining and giving proof to the legitimacy of her position by just having what I have termed argumentum ad tautologicum. When she won the leadership contest in July 2016, this is what she said.
The need, of course, to negotiate the best deal for Britain in leaving the EU and to forge a new role for ourselves in the world. Brexit means Brexit, and we're going to make a success of it.
So there it is. Brexit means Brexit. So we've had various versions of it. We've had a soft Brexit, a hard Brexit, a red, white and blue Brexit, a no deal Brexit, a May deal Brexit, a Norway plus, Canada plus plus, all of those kind of Brexits. So somebody asked her early on, well, why do you just keep saying Brexit means Brexit as if it's some kind of explanation? And then this is what she gave as a reason for that.
Well, the reason I've been saying Brexit means Brexit is precisely because it does. And to be very clear that we are going to deliver on the wishes of the British people.
Well, that makes it completely clear.
She says it to make
Brexit
it clear.
Means Brexit because it does. Yeah. Yeah. And that's her other thing, is it? Just to be clear on it. And you go, it isn't. Towards the middle of this year, with all the different flavours of Brexit and the beginning of the negotiations for what's become the deal that the Parliament wasn't allowed to vote on this week because she called it off because she thought she might lose. So Desmond Swain, he asked this question.
Will Brexit be recognisable as Brexit?
Prime Minister.
Yes, can I say to my honourable friend, there has been much sort of jocularity around the term Brexit means Brexit, but it does mean Brexit.
So, yeah, there has been some jocularity around Brexit. She's got no sense of humour at all, has she? So he kind of comes in and goes, you know, will Brexit still be recognisable as Brexit, which takes into account the whole point that we don't know what the fuck Brexit is because she's never actually explained it. Even during the Prime Minister's questions time this week, when Corbyn not unreasonably asked, well, what concessions have you managed to get in your whistle-stop tour of Europe when you ran off preventing us having the meaningful vote in Parliament to find these concessions? You know, what does Brexit now mean? And instead of saying, you know, it continues to mean Brexit, she just, you know, did lots of two-quokwe and said, well, you think we, which is equivalent to, you know, think we're bad, what about you lot? In avoiding the question, didn't answer what Brexit now means.
When she's got a ready-made answer right there, Brexit.
It's Brexit. Crazy. Recognisably and clearly it means Brexit. Yeah. There have been great examples where people have misspoke it as breakfast, which has been so cool. We should find something. Brexit means breakfast. Yeah. Which would be easier, really, to understand. You go, oh, okay. So it's like a dog's dinner, only it involves scrambled eggs.
You know, or vote for that.
Or bacon or something.
You know, that I think you would get more than 52%.
If you could vote for a Yes, exactly. A full English Brexit. People would vote for that. Yeah, quite.
It's a fallacy in the wild.
There you go, Jesse J there, doing an upbeat, like a modern one. None of this retro nonsense.
Yeah, right up to date.
Jesse J, bang up to date, Fallacy in the Wild there by Jesse J.
So in the Fallacy in the Wild, we like to talk about the fallacy of the week from a non-political perspective. Use a bit of pop culture some of the time. So the example that we've got this week is from Ramsay's Kitchen Nightmares, where Gordon Ramsay went into a restaurant to try and help them because they weren't doing so well. And the owner of the restaurant just didn't want to listen to what he had to say. So she kept saying this.
I think our food's good. I'm standing by my food. I think our food's good.
So what part of store-bought frozen food do you think's good?
I think our food's good.
Help me to understand. What part do you think's good?
I think it's good. I mean, I don't understand what you're asking me.
Okay, so out of all the dishes that I had, the veal piccata that's old that you agreed to...
I do.
The lasagna that's microwaved, that's stone cold, not even microwaved properly, and the salmon with the paint, I'm asking you, very politely, what part of your menu do you think's good?
I think our food's good.
But you're not stupid.
I'm not stupid.
So, meatballs frozen, sauce watery, lasagna. They can't even... reheat it properly. And then why are you blowing smoke up your own ass, telling yourself in a deluded way that your food's good? Or have I missed the trick and I haven't ordered something that you said I should be eating?
I think our food's good.
Gordon Ramsay starts off actually quite calm there. But in the face of her just continually saying, I think our food's good, he does begin to lose it a bit. And but he is making reasonable points. He's pointing out that the food is not good and reasons why the food is not good and specific ways in which the food is not good, and asking her to explain it to him. And her only point is, I think the food's good.
Yeah. So that, so that what he's doing is giving a demonstration of how to try and counter the bald-faced cheek of people who are continually asserting the same point over and over again. Brexit is Brexit. The food is good. The wall is being built. And you just because you want, and yet he's also expressing the frustration that we all feel, because he starts from, okay, so why is it that you're doing this, to you're blowing smoke up your own ass, within one program. He's kind of, what? And he's just getting completely exasperated. And you realize, I get the sense that the woman is beginning to see what he's saying and the merit in what it is that he's saying. So, but has no comeback. She's mortally embarrassed and, is ashamed of the point that she made earlier on that our food is good. She can't kind of, is it an American thing? She can't just go, yeah, no, you're right. Thanks very much. You've got years of experience. What can we do to make the food as good as I want it to be? That kind of humble, just kind of stepping aside and letting the position that you're holding, just letting it drop for a moment so that you can just find some third way. What she's doing is continually thinking that what he is up to is just arguing with her. So she's just thinks she's in the right and is holding her position and thinks that that's a valid
But there's no counter argument to engage with the points that are being made at all. It's just a stubborn repetition. It's just a refusal to accept that your point has been refuted, not that it's even possible to refute it, but that it's already been debunked. What you're saying is clearly wrong, and everyone knows it's wrong, but you're still going to say it anyway. It's pretty amazing.
So we're gonna play
fake news, folks. I love the game. It's a great game.
I understand the game as well as anybody.
Yes, it's time for Fake News, the game where I read out three Trump quotes, two of which are real and one I made up, and Mark has to figure out which one is fake news. We think that Mark is currently on 23%.
Yeah.
Memory of last episode is correct. I don't think I wrote it down.
I have wiped it from my memory because I lost. Yeah.
Which means that you have the opportunity to go up to 28.5% if you get this one right.
I'm clawing
slip
at the
down to 21% if you get it wrong.
Oh no! Well, I'm still higher than Trump's approval rating.
That's true. Depends which poll you ask.
It's the highest score ever.
Is Donald Trump complimenting himself in the third person. It's not a thing that you would think would come up much. but there you go.
So
statement number one: the Pope is being told that Donald Trump is not a nice person. Okay, Donald Trump is a very nice person, and I'm a very nice person, and I'm a very good Christian. Or number two: I think Donald Trump is a very down to earth kind of a very humble person, probably the most humble person you've ever met. Or number three: China has total respect for Donald Trump and for Donald Trump's very, very large brain.
Okay. I like the one, the first one, where he kind of catches himself out and he forgets who he's talking about when he says Donald Trump is a very nice person and I'm a very nice person. And I'm a very good Christian. A very good Christian. Okay, yeah. I think Donald Trump's very down to earth. Got a very good... probably the most humble person you've ever met. I think that one's true because I think I saw him saying that. Yeah, and I don't think it was CGI'd. I think that, yeah, so I think two is probably true. China has total respect for Donald Trump and for Donald Trump's very, very large brain. I can't imagine that for a moment. I think they probably laughed his brain. Okay, the Pope is being told Donald Trump is not a nice person. Okay. Well, where's he got that from? Okay. I think that number one, the Pope one, is the one that you made up.
Okay. So you think number one is fake news.
Yeah.
Number two you think is real, and number three is real. So let's go in reverse order.
Okay.
So number three you think is real, and number three is...
I do.
Real.
China has total respect for Donald Trump and for Donald Trump's very, very large brain.
A brain.
Yeah.
No, brain. What was he about to say? Ass? Anus? What was he about to say?
He, in his head, aneurysm? He's quoting someone. But obviously that's not what was said by anyone.
No. That is astonishing. No way. I mean, because just by saying that, everyone's going to lose all respect that they ever had for him. Not that anyone's ever had that for him. But just by saying that out loud to somebody recording it.
Donald Trump's very, very large a brain.
Yeah. Did he have to, like, was he referring to his notes there? Very, very large brain.
I think he just forgot the word brain for a moment. I think that's what it was.
Yeah, very, very large acumen. I suspect it was acumen. That was it. And he forgot what the word was when he got there. He couldn't read it. So acumen, acumen, what's that? What is that? Some kind of spice. Wow.
So number two.
No, I can't believe that was real.
Is real. And number two is fake news.
Really?
I'm afraid so.
Oh, wow. That's very good indeed. I think Donald Trump is very down to earth kind of.
He has, claimed to be a very humble person a few times. He's claimed that part of the reason that he and the Pope would get on so well is that they're both very humble people. And he's claimed that I think when he was being interviewed, the interviewer said, "You're not exactly a humble person." And he said, "I am. Yeah. I think I am a humble person." "I think you couldn't possibly understand how humble I am."
Right.
So it was a little bit of a trick, but he didn't actually say
And it's actually true that it isn't possible for you to imagine how humble I think. He was quite right in that statement. Yeah. Right. Oh, wow.
So which means that number one.
That means that number one is, he actually said that.
Is real.
Oh, my God.
The Pope is being told that Donald Trump is not a nice person, okay? Donald Trump is a very nice person, and I am a very nice person. And I'm a very good Christian.
Why did they applaud? He's a very nice person.
Hard to say.
And I am a very... What? So, hang on. So you look at that and you think, well, Donald Trump is a very nice person, and I'm a very nice person. Perhaps they're two different people. That's why you can talk about them in the third
thinking
person.
Thinking he was John Barron at that point.
Yeah.
Hard to say.
Yeah. I mean, it's just bizarre, isn't it? Not least that he talks about himself in the third person.
Yeah.
And then holds that third person up to be a prime, you know, a very nice person, a good example. He puts Donald Trump on a pedestal himself. And what? It's awful, isn't it? It's scary that he kind of thinks that that's an okay thing to say. Why didn't he just say, okay, people are saying that I'm not nice. But I think that's a bit harsh. I view myself as a good Christian. I think I'm an okay person, but it's the Pope. So I will, I will be humble in his presence. Because we're both humble
people.
He
doesn't understand humble, clearly.
No, he's like the least. This is why he's not self-aware, because he thinks that Donald Trump is somebody else. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Unfortunately, what that means for you is that you have slipped down to 21%.
Oh, no. But I don't mind, really, because it was just a delight to hear him say that appalling nonsense. No, so I'm 21%.
Yeah.
So
podcast listeners, I need your help to continue to fool Mark. If you think you can make up a convincing fake Trump quote, then share this episode on Twitter. Include your quote and the hashtag Fallacious Trump. I'll pick the best one and you'll be podcast famous. So it's time for the part of the show where we want to talk about all of the crazy stuff that's happening in the White House, but there's too much crazy stuff. There's a lot of crazy stuff going on at the moment.
Oh, God.
So this week we're titling this part of the show, Recruitment is Not a Logical Fallacy, because they're having a little bit of difficulty with recruitment at the White House at the moment.
Yeah, weirdly. Because
Trump announced last week that John Kelly would be stepping down as White House Chief of Staff at the end of the year.
Was he down or was he pushed?
Well, yeah, he would no longer be chief of staff, although it had been rumoured for a while that the feeling was mutual and he would be leaving as soon as he got the chance, really. But what they did
on the day that he joined
have another person lined up to take over from him. Because this is the thing with Trump, he tends to just kind of decide on a whim that he's going to announce that someone's leaving or that he's replacing them without having a plan, really. To the extent that he did have a plan, it seems that the likely candidate would have been Nick Ayers, who was Pence's chief of staff.
Yeah.
But pretty much straight away after Kelly was kind of fired, Nick Ayers announced that not only was he not going to take the job of chief of staff, he was leaving the White House completely. In fact, leaving the state and going somewhere else.
So it's like moving to somewhere, isn't it?
You won't be able to find me. Don't look for me, basically.
No, don't. That's right. I had a long-term plan to disappear. Yeah. There must be a whole industry in kind of witness protection kind of offshoot of all these people that were used to be members of staff who've now got to literally disappear.
There's such a lot of them.
In order to make them...
such a lot of them. But the turnover has been amazing.
Yeah, yeah. And they're never, are they going to ever get jobs anywhere else ever again?
It seems like they're having difficulty, some of them. So, yeah. It's, most of them, I think, kind of, just
there'll be a, an old
write
people,
books about
there'll be an,
Trump.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Or there'll be kind of a retirement home somewhere with lots of disgruntled. It'll be like the White House retirement home. And they'll all just be sitting there ranting at each other. And Donald Trump will come in and talk about Donald Trump in the third person with his hand in his jacket, like he's Napoleon. Yeah.
So over the next few days after this happened, various members of the cabinet and of Trump's staff have been kind of suggested by the media as being possible replacements for Kelly. And one by one, each of them have made it very clear that they don't want the job. Mick Mulvaney of the Office of Management and Budget, Steve Mnuchin, Robert Lighthizer, the U.S. Trade Representative, they've all come out and said, "Yeah, I'm happy where I am. I'm not. I don't want to do that." Rick Santorum went on CNN and was asked directly, you know, if you were offered the job, would you take it? And he said, "No, I wouldn't. I'm not going to do that."
Well, I like the way he said, "I would be honoured to do it at some point in time."
Yeah,
maybe
it's not the right time for me at the moment.
And it's a bit like politicians in British politics. They tend to leave office in order to spend more time with their family.
Yeah.
So Rick Santorum's reason was because he wanted to spend more time with his family before he's even taken office. He's going, no. I would. It would be a great honour. You know, maybe someday. Not right now. Thanks very much, but I want to spend more time with my family right now before he's even joined.
So the one Republican who was reported as kind of having an interest in doing the job is Mark Meadows, North Carolina Republican, who we actually talked about on Fear Trump in the White House last week, I think. It's also been reported separately. Well, he said in public that it would be a great honour and he would like to do it. It has been reported that he has said to friends that he wouldn't want to do it because it's a, you know, poison chalice, basically. And Trump has officially said that he won't be offering it to Mark Meadows because he is happy with where he is in Congress, basically. And Trump needs friends in Congress at the moment.
Oh, he's not kind of like the fat kid who, when you're picking sides for the basketball game. He's not like the fat kid at the back going, "Yeah, pick me. And you go, "No, you're all right. You stay where you are." It's just kind of like Trump's going around with his finger pointing out. It's just time he gets to him.
I think Meadows is valuable where he is for Trump. I think that, you know, the Congress has shifted in the midterms and they need as many Republicans in there as they can. And
because if he goes out of there, there will be another. They would have to elect another. They couldn't just replace him.
They'd have an election. Yeah. So lots of people have basically been publicly saying, "I don't want this job," because this is really weird because the chief of staff is such a prestigious job. It's really important. It's a difficult job. It's one of the hardest jobs in government because you have to be on the front line the whole time, basically, and you get very, very little credit. But, you know, people like Dick Cheney, people like Rahm Emanuel, Donald Rumsfeld, they've gone on to other things following being chief of staff and it's an amazing experience, but not so much probably when it's Trump that you're working for.
Even the Trump, no.
Especially right now, because so many people are being, you know, indicted and essentially it is like trying to find a new captain for the Titanic after it hit the iceberg.
Exactly, whilst it's going after it hit the iceberg,
So the captain goes, "Who wants to be captain?" And everyone's like,
Yeah.
"I'm all right.
You're all right. I'm going to just get into this other boat and go, if fine, you know." Yeah, well, that's the metaphor for the leadership election that we just had here with the Tory party was, you know, they crashed into the, "Oh my god, we're sinking, let's change the captain," you know. But the thing about the Trump administration is, okay, so it's a thankless task to be in chief of staff, for which you don't get much credit, and you're doing all this stuff. And you can be sure in the Trump administration, you would not get any credit.
Oh, yeah.
You've also got to deal with the idiot at the top who's blaming you for everything because he's just got a mouth that runs off at the least provocation. He's going to blame everybody. So, of course, nobody's going to take the job.
Yeah.
But what does Trump think of that? I mean,
he's obviously denying everything, fake news. He said, he tweeted, many over 10 are vying for and wanting the White House chief of staff position. Why wouldn't someone want one of the truly great and meaningful jobs in Washington? And yeah, he's his own answer to the question, isn't he?
Many, over 10. Yeah. But, yeah. So why wouldn't they?
He's claimed today, this is Thursday, Thursday night, he's claimed today that he has it down to five people, who mostly well-known and terrific people, obviously, not giving any names at the moment, but he's kind of choosing between these brilliant people.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of advice that comes from Jed Bartlett. There was an episode of The West Wing where it was the State of the Union, and they have this thing called Designated Survivor, where a member of the party comes in and is not at the State of the Union in case there's a massive disaster, a bomb or whatever, so that they will then take over. So Bartlett is giving the Designated Survivor some advice if he does end up having to take over.
You got a best friend?
Yes, sir.
Is he smarter than you?
Yes, sir.
Would you trust him with your life?
Yes, sir.
That's your chief of staff.
So the trouble is, Trump doesn't have any friends.
No.
So
let alone a best friend.
There's certainly no best friend that he thinks is smarter than him and would trust him. So
that he would trust with his life.
Yeah.
No, because you could trust probably pretty much everybody on Capitol Hill to take his life, given the chance,
given the opportunity,
if they could get away with it. That would be a good question to ask any potential candidate. If, given the chance, you could get away with it and nobody would find out, would you kill the president? The current president, not any president, this one.
Yeah, this
would
specific,
you do that?
I think you'd probably get that 60-65%, something like that. Yeah.
I would. Yeah. The other 35% maybe come back and go, okay, yeah, what weapon would I get to choose? I'd come back with a question. Yeah.
So, as I say, he supposedly narrowed it down to five terrific people. There's some speculation over who those people might be, but some of the names that have been rumoured include Chris Christie coming back from the exile where he's been. The current acting AG, Matt Whitaker, which would be a bit of a controversial choice given that he's not deemed by most people to even be suitable to be Attorney General or acting Attorney General. Jared Kushner has apparently been
that's the most frightening one. Perhaps he's the skinny geeky kid that has his hand up.
Maybe
as well that will get overlooked.
But he'll
be the last one.
Trump about it apparently. So,
no.
And the other name that I've heard being put forward is Newt Gingrich, which would be quite bizarre as well.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Wow. I forgot about him. Yeah.
Yeah. It'll be interesting over the next few days, I guess. Maybe longer than that. They've said that John Kelly is staying in his role until at least January 2nd while they figure out who's going to take over from him. So
whilst they work out whether he's going to get impeached or not. Whether it's worth actually signing up. Well, maybe that's the thing that's kind of making people a bit hesitant is, I could sign up with this, but I'll be out of work in 3 months because there'll be no president to work for.
It's not a long-term role at this point.
Yes, exactly. No. Don't put any long-term playing records on.
Yeah.
And finally, some things we really don't have time to talk about.
A federal judge has sentenced Michael Cohen to 3 years in prison for financial crimes, lying to Congress, and campaign finance violations, which were at the direction of President Trump. Seems like if Trump really wanted Hillary to get locked up, he should have just given her a job on his campaign.
Exactly. AMI, the company behind the National Enquirer, has apparently been working with prosecutors since September and has admitted coordinating with Trump's campaign to pay hush money to a Playboy model in order to influence the election. Honestly, if you can't trust the National Enquirer, who can you trust?
The sentencing memos from Michael Cohen heavily implicated someone called Individual One in various felonies. Trump tweeted, "Totally clears the president, thank you." Because, hey, it's worth a shot, right? The identity of individual one remains a mystery, although this extract from the memo narrows it down a bit. On approximately June 16th, 2015, Individual One, for whom Cohen worked at the time, began an ultimately successful campaign for President of the United States.
Who is that then?
Yeah. No one knows.
No, ultimately successful. That's brilliant, isn't it? On 10th of December, in a collusion-denying tirade, Trump tweeted that the Democrats were unable to find a weapon that fired decorative embroidery made by gathering cloth in regularly spaced round tucks. Whilst hundreds of thousands of people on Twitter immediately thought he just couldn't spell smoking, Bill Mitchell, the host of a YouTube channel dedicated to supporting the presidency of Donald J. Trump, quickly retorted 5 hours later, cramming mocking and smoking together in order to save Trump's ass. Well, that's got to be worth a cup of kofifi next time he's passing the White House, surely.
When told that federal prosecutors believe Trump has committed multiple crimes, Utah Senator and spineless dinosaur Orrin Hatch said, "Okay, but I don't care. All I can say is he's doing a good job as president. I don't think he was involved in crimes, but even then, you know, you can make anything a crime under current laws if you want to." Fortunately, we don't have to care about Orrin Hatch anymore, as he's retiring from the Senate. And he gave his farewell speech this week. The internet's response was not exactly mournful. Here is a genuine, typical tweet. Senator Orrin Hatch delivers his farewell address on the Senate floor, and I cackle and give zero fucks. I hope that ghoul dies of boredom as soon as retirement starts. Fuck him.
I love the ghoul. That's great, isn't it? Last week, Dan McCready, the Democrat running for Congress in the disputed 9th District, renounced his concession that he'd made to Republican Mark Harris in the midterms, despite being entitled to a recount. North Carolina Republicans have originally threatened to sue the elections board if it refused to certify the 9th results. But following ballot tampering evidence, they've weirdly since backed all the way down from that, and their own state GOP executive director, Dallas Woodhouse, is this week effectively calling for a new election. Whilst it's rather gratifying seeing a right-wing party that isn't British fighting among itself for once, our lot can learn a thing or two about admitting to tampering and rerunning votes.
Yeah, and it's good to see that they finally found some voter fraud. Just happened to be Republican voter fraud.
And it's turned out to be their own. Yeah. Exactly, yeah. And they're also looking into Mark Harris's winning in May over the incumbent Republican.
Yeah.
Apparently.
Yeah, the primary was also possibly entirely well run.
Yeah.
Former Secretary of State Rex Tillerson was interviewed at an event in Houston last week and said, quote, "The president would say, here's what I want to do and here's how I want to do it. And I'd have to say to him, well, Mr. President, I understand what you want to do, but you can't do it that way. It violates the law." Naturally, Trump accepted the criticism with good grace. And no, seriously, though, he tweeted, "Mike Pompeo is doing a great job. I'm very proud of him. His predecessor, Rex Tillerson, didn't have the mental capacity needed. He was dumb as a rock, and I couldn't get rid of him fast enough. He was lazy as hell." The best people.
Trump is, of course, concerned about managing the debt owed to America's creditors by the most successful economy in history, currently about $21 trillion. And he expressed his concern with a heartfelt, "Yeah, but I won't be here." So now we know why he doesn't care about climate change. There is, of course, no correlation between Trump's statement and the recent successful flight by Richard Branson's Virgin Galactic to the edge of space.
So that's all the bad arguments and faulty reasoning we have time for this episode. If you hear Trump say something stupid and wonder if it's a fallacy, find us on Twitter at FallaciousTrump or email us on pod@fallaciouStrump.com.
If you think we've used a fallacy ourselves, let us know. And if you've had a good time, please give us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you support the show on our Patreon page at patreon.com/ftrump, you'll get extended episodes as well as bonus content like our chapter-by-chapter breakdown of Bob Woodward's book Fear, Trump in the White House.
You can connect with us and other listeners in our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/fallaciouStrump, where we'll post some links to stuff we've talked about.
All music is by The Outbursts and was used with permission. So until next time on Fallacious Trump, we'll leave the last word to the Donald.
That's right. Go home to mommy. Bye. Bye.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.